Hey everyone. We all make big decisions the same way. We ask advice from the friend who we're pretty sure will recommend the thing we already want to do. Today's book is Decisive by Chip Heath and Dan Heath.
I'm Kellen Erskine. I'm a comic, a father, and someone who has made at least 15 decisions.
And I'm David Vance. Like Steve Jobs, I try to limit my daily decision-making, but instead of 50 black turtlenecks, I have 50 gray Toyota Corollas. Decisive is a book about making better decisions. I just did the trolley dilemma in real life and I aced it.
And this is The Book Pile. Very Yes says, I've been ruminating for a week about how wrong Kellen is about saying C.S. Lewis's writing is less sophisticated than J.R.R. Tolkien's. Then I realized I've fallen into his trap. Being wrong is kind of Kellen's thing. Okay, this is the first time I'm reading this. JK, Kellen is great. He's super funny and definitely the best Satan of all the Satans. Well, that sounds like an insult if you don't know the context.
Don't explain it.
But also, it isn't fair to talk about how wrong I am about C.S. Lewis and frame it as if all I said was that he's unsophisticated. I specifically said C.S. Lewis is a great fantasy writer, but I put him under Tolkien because he injected Santa Claus into a story. Think of how your respect for the Lord of the Rings trilogy might diminish if at the end of this epic, the Easter Bunny hopped into Mount Doom and helped Frodo destroy the ring.
In a way, Sauron is Santa. He's always watching you. He lives far away but judges you.
When he laughs, he shakes like a tower full of jelly.
Finally, our next two books are Where the Sidewalk Ends and Doing Good Better.
All right, and without further ado, here are four lessons that we took from Decisive.
All right, lesson one, widen your options. They say one of our biggest decision-making problems is that very often we only consider one or two things. They call it narrow framing. Like when Bella is wondering, should I marry Edward or Jacob? Everyone else is like, I think you should meet any other boys. Katniss falls for the only two eligible boys she ever met who she didn't kill. So one of their biggest tricks is when you're making a big choice, just consider more options. A great tip they have is if you're considering two options, ask what would I do if I couldn't do either of these? And all of a sudden you get more creative. Another trick they recommend is and, not or, meaning if you're choosing between two things you care about, try to figure out if there's a way to have both rather than sacrificing one of them. Mm. And I know at least one listener now feels better about their adultery. Kellen, have you ever had a big decision where you weren't considering enough options?
Yeah, I mean, when my wife and I, we were deciding on houses, we only looked at these two big ones and we couldn't decide, so we just bought both. No.
Relatable.
In my early 20s, when I dropped out of college to pursue stand-up comedy, I interviewed for three retail jobs. None of them called me back. And then my brother got me a job with the water softener division of a plumbing company. You know, a lateral move from clothing stores. And with that job, I was working in San Jose during the day and then driving an hour to San Francisco every other night to do comedy. And I had that job for years. And I think back on that and think, why did I think that there were only four places to submit a job application? Like with what I was pursuing at night, I could have tried to get a job in San Francisco.
It's like a genie's wishes. Oh, crap, this is my fourth one. I better get this right.
I better stick with this job for 12 years.
Oh, my gosh, 12 years.
Yep.
Were you very happy in the job, or was it just like inertia?
It was more inertia, and it became the thing where I started to get paid a little more, and then realizing a few years in, like, if I start anywhere else, this limited skill set is the only thing I have to offer. And so I just stuck with it.
That's how a big water softener gets you. They wine and dine you with a healthy dose of salt. My narrow framing as a kid growing up was just saying, okay, should I be a doctor or not. And even in school, film was my favorite class and fiction writing was my second. And I was still like, well, better go study for the MCAT. I think young people do this when they think, oh, my ex is the only person I could ever love.
Yes.
And it's like, wow, it's lucky you met the 1 in 7 billion person so early. Like, calm down, Romeo, and tell me Juliet's middle name.
All right. Lesson two, talk to somebody who's done it. This is why I decided not to become president. I just talked to enough of them that I was like, sounds like you have to get up early a lot.
Have we talked about this, how we tell our kids to be president and then like 1 in 5 of them die on the job? Same with astronauts. Do you know how many of them have blown up and yet we tell every kid that that's what they should aspire to?
The one convenient thing about dying as an astronaut, though, is that in most cases, you die and spread your own ashes at the same time.
Oh my gosh.
You're up in heaven going, oh, I hope they blow over Yosemite. That's what I wanted.
Boomers always talk about how wimpy millennials are, but I've heard a bunch of boomers complain about how traumatic the Challenger was. I've never heard a millennial complain about the Columbia.
That's a good point.
Like,
also, boomer is another word for someone who dies in a space shuttle explosion. All right, lesson three. The Heaths explained how most people who start a restaurant, which, by the way, out of the gate has a 1 in 3 chance of failure, just like presidents, they don't seek the opinions or advice from someone else who has actually started a restaurant. Yet a majority of those same entrepreneurs will go to Yelp to find a restaurant to eat at. Or if you're like me making a dinner decision, you just throw a dart at a map of restaurants in your area. Actually, the most fun version of that is taking a dart to a food court while blindfolded. I did that once, and Dave, do you want to know who stopped me?
Who?
A good guy with a dart. Anyway, the point is, entrepreneurs are unreasonably optimistic. Not that it's bad, but I just think if there's an opportunity to increase your chance of success, why not take it, right?
Yeah.
Especially when you'll trust strangers' advice on whether or not to do brunch at Holy Crepe. So they say, talk to an expert, but also ask them the right questions. So first of all, an expert is simply someone who has more experience than you. They say, for example, if you're starting a sushi place, you'll have more in common than you think, even with someone who's started a successful corn dog restaurant. And I think that's especially true if they stuff their corn dogs with raw fish. Don't steal my idea. And a good rule of thumb for questions to ask an expert are ones where the answer doesn't require prediction. So they say, ask about the successful person's process in the present and the past. For example, if you're going to ask me about how to become a comic, I can't tell you how to write jokes that'll work every time or how famous you can become. Both of those are for future audiences to decide. But I can tell you that your best shot at writing a good joke is to write a lot of them and also to slip each member of the audience a $100 bill. I am heavily in debt.
Did you do this as a water softener guy?
The humblest mindset is, quote, what can I reasonably expect to happen if I make this choice? And they say, once we accept the answer, then we can decide if we want to fight the odds.
Hmm.
So if you're 17 and you're considering getting married on your birthday, I say talk to a few people who got married at 18 before making the decision. See what they have to say. I'm sure all of them are still all for it. Also, you can look up the numbers. 49% of people who marry before 25 get divorced.
Wow.
By the way, this isn't to convince everyone to not start a business or not to get married early, unless you're my kids, in which please, please don't get married early.
Yeah, you can tell what people actually believe based on the advice they give their kids.
I just think you should wait till your frontal lobes are fully developed, which is coincidentally at 26. Anyway, I appreciate the advice they give to talk to people who've gone through something because they know more than you do. Trevor.
Did I tell you my sister dated a Trevor and we nicknamed him Trevor Not Ever and they did not work out? It's been funny the way that some of my siblings' boyfriends or girlfriends haven't made the cut. My other sister was dating someone once and he came home and fell asleep on our couch. And he woke up to six of my brothers ringed around him chanting, kill, 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 kill. He did not handle it well.
That's amazing. This is the first time that I've wanted 10 kids.
I'll say this for being the oldest of 10. It is so easy to get a mob going. We've been on road trips where for a long time, many people are chanting, take us to Disneyland or we won't be your kids. All right, lesson three. Fire bullets before cannonballs. This is a short one. The basic idea is before you commit big, commit small as a test. So date before you get married, get medical jobs before you get 200 grand in med school debt, try being agnostic before you be atheist. One thing I started doing from the book, I've been burned enough times hiring the wrong person that when I can, I try to hire people for a quick trial period. And then if it works, I hire them permanently.
All right. Lesson four, set trip wires. So this is helpful for booby traps, which is, I thought it was a weird chapter to include, but I guess it's for indecisive kids who have been left alone in a big house on Christmas. Now, their definition of a trip wire is, quote, something to jolt us out of our unconscious routines that take us off autopilot and make us aware that we have a choice to make. They say autopilot can cause people to persist in efforts that seem doomed. We all know these people, right? We are never these people. They say, for example, like a couple whose relationship makes them both miserable, or an executive who refuses to believe that his pet project has failed, or a relative with a naive dream of making a living as a landscape painter. I want to know the brainstorming process behind that one where they were like, okay, we have to come up with a pipe dream that won't offend a group that would be aggressive enough to threaten us with violence. So me and my wife decided to move to LA for me to pursue stand-up comedy, but we did set a trip wire. We had a 5-year deadline, meaning that after 5 years, if I didn't make it, I'd be dead from doing lines. No, it just meant that that would be the tripwire for us to stop and make the choice to stop chasing comedy as a career. And likely we'd move to someplace better than LA where I could then be sad for the rest of my life, but at least there'd be parking. But luckily...
Wait, pause. Do you think you'd be sad for the rest of your life if you weren't doing comedy?
Yeah, meaning that there would just be a permanent emotional fixture in the back of my head of like what could have happened. I would still do comedy wherever I live. Like I would never stop performing comedy. But the idea of like pursuing it to get discovered and be on TV is less possible when you decide to move to an affordable area like St. Louis.
Sure.
Luckily, 4 years in, I did get a comedy agent and a manager. I'm going to include an applause track here, Dave. And I recently performed a sold-out show at a sports pub in Fairbanks, Alaska. So the Heaths know what they're talking about. So they suggest if you're dating someone with commitment issues, why not set a 3-month tripwire to see if there's any progress at that point? I also think if there wasn't any progress, you could literally set a tripwire for them. Just an easier way to break up if you make it look like an accident. Or if a project has stalled out at work, could you set a $50,000 budget limit on the funds you'll use to jumpstart it? They say tripwires grab you by the collar and say, if you're going to do this, you have to do it now, which is also what the worst car salesmen say to you. So they say, with the right tripwire, we can ensure that we don't throw good money or time after bad. Finally, I just thought this was funny. They call the annual employee performance review, quote, a desperate tripwire. Like how you wouldn't take inventory of your child's behavior once a year, unless you're Steve Jobs.
I'll say for how much we go after Steve Jobs, we better both be good fathers.
I think as someone who is currently talking to you on an iPhone while using AirPods on my MacBook Pro, I've given Steve Jobs enough money to maybe call him a name every once in a while.
All right, random facts. There's this great quote from Erica Jong. Advice is what we ask for when we already know the answer, but wish we didn't.
Yeah, something that we didn't cover in this book that we've talked about on previous episodes, speaking of that, is a confirmation bias. Mm-hmm. Dovetailing off of your quote, the Heaths say, "We often pretend that we want truth, but we're really just seeking reassurance." So I did a quick little experiment today, and this is for everyone who says, "I did research on this," when really they were going to tell you their point even if they never looked anything up, because all they did was look up something until they found the point that they were trying to make.
Right.
So you know how if you Google with quotes, it has to find the exact phrase. Mm-hmm. Why is coffee good for you? And then why is coffee bad for you? And the first few articles that show up for good are, 8 reasons why the right amount of coffee is good for you. 10 convincing reasons why coffee is good for you. Coffee is a health drink. And my favorite one is National Geographic has an article that just says, "Coffee is good for you." And now for coffee is bad for you. First page of Google, why you should not drink coffee. When coffee is bad for you. 10 dangers of coffee. It's so crazy that in each of these examples, a couple of them are so certain.
Right.
I just think the takeaway from that is, like, if you really don't want to know the truth, just keep drinking coffee, or don't, but stop wasting your time looking for the answer that you want.
Well, if they sound certain, I bet part of it is that the author was certain that title would get clicks. Mm-hmm. You know what they say about social media and the news? Nuance sells. Don't we all tune into Rachel Maddow and Tucker Carlson to hear how uncertain they are about things?
I do try and educate myself on both sides. I do think that, like, peer-reviewed studies can be a more credible route to take if you really are looking for information. Like, maybe stay away from BuzzFeed and look to the...
I mean, it probably depends on which part of BuzzFeed, because apparently their investigative journalism team won a Pulitzer.
Oh my God. This is one of those things where I don't think more of BuzzFeed. But the Pulitzer.
Just think less of the Pulitzer.
I'm a fan of Roger Ebert's movie reviews. I don't even agree with half of them. I just enjoy him so much as a writer. I watched this beautiful documentary about his life, and there's this part where one of his coworkers said that Ebert, he won a Pulitzer in like 1976, and for like the rest of his career, he would pull that out of his back pocket in arguments.
You know, if either of us had a Pulitzer, we would 100% do that.
I think it just makes you bulletproof if you're going to give the second Transformers movie 4 stars and someone comes at you.
They share an idea from Roy Baumeister about big decisions. In our cars, we may spend 95% of our time going straight, but it's the turns that determine where we end up. Mm. Roy Baumeister is this great psychologist. And also, don't you think a great rapper name would be Lil Baumeister? Kellen, you talked about tripwires, questions to ask yourself to get yourself out of autopilot. When I first read this book 9 years ago, I gave myself a list of tripwire questions to ask myself each month. I just went back and looked. And here's some of them. Tripwire, am I being fun and spontaneous enough? Tripwire, do I present myself in such a way that people take me seriously? Tripwire, are there any adventures you should have this next month? Remember that we become less open to new experiences as we age. Tripwire, am I paranoid enough? What threats or opportunities am I overlooking? Tripwire, do I need an oil change?
I love that half of this list is stuff that that guy from Memento would tattoo on himself. So, Dave, I'm coming up with a new segment for the podcast. It's called Out of Context Quotes. And here's the one for this book. If you can ooch in the business world, can you ooch at home? So at one point they mentioned Joseph Priestley, who was sort of a 1800s Renaissance man who invented soda water. And they say, quote, every time you enjoy a Diet Coke, you can thank Priestley. Joke's on you guys. I've never enjoyed a Diet Coke.
It was not meant to be enjoyed. It was meant to erode your very bones.
So those restaurant statistics that I mentioned earlier, those came from the National Restaurant Association, which wouldn't you change the name for the sake?
No, they probably get a lot of extra funding.
I love the innocent new member of that association, like driving through Wyoming, like, wow, there are so many of other members of my club here. When I was looking up divorce rates, I found, and this is all from the CDC, the profession with the fourth lowest divorce rate is optometrist.
Huh.
And they're the only medical profession in the top six, the list of jobs with the least divorces. I think it's because you're not in a hospital environment where you're interacting with other doctors and nurses. You know how they all just go make out in the supply closets? Basically, this is off of every hospital TV show. Now, I just think...
That's what I always confront my girlfriend about.
You smell like extra syringes.
That's for sure a line in a drug drama by someone who knows nothing about drugs. I can smell the needles on him.
But with all these faithful eye doctors, I just think it's harder to get things going with someone when your office is inside a Costco.
Yeah, you have your affairs in bulk or not at all.
How would you even start that relationship? Like, hey, you want to go with me and get some sausage samples?
All right, to recap, our favorite lessons from Decisive. 1, widen your options. 2, talk to someone who's done it. 3, fire bullets before cannonballs. 4, set tripwires.
And 5, if you're still chasing after that landscape painting money, you just keep doing your thing, man.